You're listening to The Back 40, the podcast for Ontario farmers, covering topics and issues that matter most to Ontario agriculture. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm the host of The Back 40, Mike Brine, agribusiness specialist at Trillium Mutual Insurance. Over the past few years, we've seen a little bit more in the news about public trust in farming and in agriculture. And I've always found it very interesting that while farmers are amongst the most trusted people as far as consumers go, big business agriculture is not necessarily nearly as trusted as the individuals are. This is a bit of a dichotomy. It's a bit of a stretch, and sometimes we have difficulties understanding why that is. Today, we're talking with Crystal Mackay. Crystal is the founder and CEO of a communications firm, Loft 32, but her passion in this area goes way back. She was the CEO for Canadian Centre for Food Integrity and for Farm and Food Care. She's recently been named one of the 7 most influential women in agriculture. Crystal, welcome to the Back 40.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So as I said, some of this is relatively recent that it's kind of been brought to agriculture's attention that we need to do a better job of connecting with consumers. But you've been doing this for over 25 years. Why is this such a passion for you?
I think I was born into it in that I actually lived in Toronto in the farmhouse my mom grew up in, which sounds funny, Toronto and farm. But my mom's family farm is at the corner of Kipling and Dixon. And Dixon Road would be the airport road if you've been to the Toronto airport. That's my mom's farm that she grew up on. And so I lived there till I was 7, but of course it was surrounded by high rises and houses. So at that age, my parents did a life-changing move and moved to a farm in the Ottawa Valley. And I was 7 and I was the luckiest kid in the world. So I always felt I had a bit more of an appreciation for farming, maybe than some of my farm friends that actually was born into it. So with 100 cousins, literally not exaggerating, I had lots of city cousins that would come and visit every summer or, you know, spring break, et cetera. And I loved teaching them about life on the farm and where their food comes from. Then in high school, I went on to be the Renfrew County Dairy Princess, which is now called the Dairy Educators. And honestly, I loved it so much, going into classrooms and talking to kids about where milk comes from. And even in rural, very rural Ottawa Valley, it was very evident even back then that kids didn't know where milk came from, even though they drove by dairy farms on a regular basis. And so I am that example of be careful what you wish for, because I wished for a career in talking to people about food and farming way back then.
So you've been educating people for a very long time about this and started educating your peers, which in school. How's it different what you do now as opposed to what you did back then?
Well, you know, honestly, it hasn't changed that much, just different media and much larger, those one-on-one conversations that I practiced as a kid and then went on as a summer student, worked for the Ministry of Agriculture, the original group, Ontario Farm Animal Council before Farm and Food Care. I used to work with them 100 days a year at public events, having real conversations with real people. And I called that my time in the trenches, just practicing, answering difficult questions, emotional topics. Your food is very emotional, and so are things like farm animal welfare. So that's those conversations have just evolved from one-on-one to now much larger audiences, whether it's giving a presentation or perhaps a media interview in a mainstream media outlet.
You've been connecting farmers and the farm message with consumers. What would you say is the biggest challenge to get that message out?
Well, unfortunately, bad news outsells good 7-1. And it's doing a great job feeding our country with no food safety issues, caring for the environment, caring for our animals 365 days a year. You just have to work a lot harder to get that message into the news. And with social media, we have been much more successful. And there's definitely some silver linings of people going online in the last year of being able to reach people. So instead of touring 30 students through a farm, you can do an online tour for hundreds without putting on any rubber boots or biosecurity concerns.
Would you say that urban people are fairly receptive to the message that you're trying to bring to them, or is that part of the challenge as well?
They are definitely more interested in where their food comes from than ever before. I would say in the last 5 years, I've seen the shift to interest in where food comes from. The challenge is to get their attention. So once you have their attention and say, hey, let's talk about where your food comes from, then you can have a great conversation. The challenge is it's very expensive to reach an urban audience and you have to be flashy to get their attention. There's a lot of competing interest in the news or in advertising to get people's attention. So the trick is, how do you get their attention? And the key is the wording that you and I are using is where their food comes from. So if you ask somebody, would you like to learn about farming? The answer is much less likely to be yes than if you say, hey, do you want to talk about where your food comes from? They will definitely say yes. And guess what? Hint, it's the same information. It's just a little different package. So they don't want to be educated about farming. They do want to learn about where their food comes from. And that is a big difference.
It's more about having a conversation than it is about having a lecture.
Absolutely. And they don't necessarily connect that learning about where their food comes from is the same thing as knowing a bit more about farming. If we said the same thing to you, it's like you drive a car every day, but do you need to know how steel is manufactured? Probably not, but you certainly have some questions if there's a problem that shows up on the news. So the same thing can be said for farming. People eat every day, but they don't understand how the food is made. So to have that, to say, hey, do you want a lecture on farming? No. Would you like to learn a little bit more about how your food is grown in Canada? Absolutely, yes.
The people at the forefront of that, obviously, are the farmers. And anytime that we do a survey out there, we always find that farmers are very well respected and trusted. So why is it that farmers are so trusted and agricultural as an industry is not well trusted?
Well, it's an excellent point, Mike. There's a huge difference in level of trust and credibility between a farmer as an individual and even the associations that represent farmers, and then definitely the food system as a whole. And I think the visual I could give you is the warmth and positive trust and credibility people have in farmers are around words like hardworking, dedicated, multi-generational. There's a lot of warmth around that. It also has a picture of Old MacDonald beside it. Then when we use a picture of the food system or modern agriculture, then you have this large, faceless, corporate-owned, you know, maybe somebody in a suit in another country, and it's very far from the truth. I always say, would the real farmer please stand up? So what we need to do when we're telling our farm story, and we've been working really hard at it in the last few years, is take Old MacDonald's children. They've gone to school. Now they're home running the farm. So we need to introduce new MacDonald's basically to the public and have a conversation to say, you know what? I'm a fifth generation, I'm third generation, or I'm first generation on the farm, but I still farm with the same care and commitment that my great grandparents did. But now I use GPS and modern technology to do it.
It's become a very technical and very innovative. It's always been innovative, but very technically based as far as the production of our food from a primary agricultural standpoint. And many farmers were concerned even before that about nobody really understands what it is I do. So why should we care whether or not our consumers understand what it is that we do as farmers?
Well, I think the key is we're not going to educate, you know, I'm using air quotes that you can't hear on a podcast, but you're not going to educate our way out of this gap between people that grow our food and the people who eat it. We can't educate everyone about the food system and every aspect of it. What we can do is work to ensure that there is trust in the food system and the people who grow our food. So it's definitely a shift. I've been working in this space for a long time. My first efforts at educating the public was bringing 5 different breeds of dairy cows to a local fair so people could know the difference between a Jersey and a Guernsey and a Holstein. I felt that was very important at the time. Now it's like, okay, let's go right back to this is a dairy cow. This is where milk comes from. She's different than an Angus. It's a very different place. The point is, the value of it is viewing it differently, that we're not trying to educate the public about every aspect of the food system, but we are trying to have a conversation with them with the goal to earn trust. So it's more, I definitely see it as a shift to recognizing it as a business risk. If we don't have the trust of the public, we don't have permission to grow and innovate and continue to do the things that we need to do to feed our country.
You talk about this as being a bit of a business risk. Don't get our message out there. Can you give us an example of where you've seen that as an issue in other industries that have not gotten out and not taken care of this in a timely fashion?
Absolutely. I started broadening my understanding of the value of investing in public trust by looking at other sectors. And I started looking at the oil industry specifically and forestry. And there's a lot of parallels between forestry and farming, you know, natural resources. Their sector leaders were very open with me, sharing their lessons learned, regrets, and as well as programs and areas they invested in. And I would say there's a big difference between the oil industry and agriculture and the approach we've taken and the value of learning from other people's approaches and what went wrong and what worked well is really important for agriculture to learn. So those oil and forestry both use the term social license and spent literally millions of dollars chasing after what they called their social license, which was freedom to operate. And upon studying those examples and the concept around public trust, I took a course in it at UBC years ago when I was in the pork industry, and you would go to build a pig barn and your own neighbors wouldn't talk to you here in Ontario. And I'm like, we need to do better with neighbor relations. And that led me to this journey of we need a long-term view of public trust in food and the people who grow it. And now I'm really pleased to say that I've spoken about this topic around the world, and Canada is absolutely leading the world in our investment and approaches on long-term strategy, public trust in food and farming, and much more proactive than many, many other people.
Do you find that we're maybe a little bit behind on the conversation? We're always reacting to stories in the news. We're always reacting to something that someone else has said, and we don't really do a very good job of getting out in front with our own story.
Well, you know, I love hockey. So like a good hockey game, there'll always be a need to play defense, but we definitely need to score some goals. I would say traditionally we've focused more on defense and not enough on offense and telling the story proactively. But I think some of the efforts, and, you know, we mentioned some of the groups I've been involved with in the past, Farm and Food Care Ontario as an example here at home, working really hard to tell the farm story. I see a lot of individual farmers stepping up on social media, whether it's their personal Facebook page or through Twitter, or making an effort to post videos on YouTube like Sandy Brock, to just really step up and tell the farm story. So I've never seen so many efforts to tell the farm story. So I'm really proud about that. So I think it's a good place to pause and just say, you know what, we are doing more proactive work than we ever have before. The challenge is to make those efforts even bigger, to say we need to reach millions of people, not thousands of people. And as I said, the silver lining of the online opportunities, and Farm Food 360 is the virtual farm tour platform Farm and Food Care has, I'm sure some of you have seen that, and I encourage you to check it out. That's a great example of opportunities to reach millions of people, not just thousands.
So how do we get that message out to them, though? I've been on that Farm and Food Care 360 site, and it's a terrific site. I mean, you get into farms that you would never get into otherwise. And I mean, I've been in agriculture all my life, and there's lots of stuff on there that I've never seen before, but it's not well known. There's not a lot of people that know about that.
Best kept secrets, right? So there's a few things. As individuals, they say the average person now has 300 people within their individual social channels. So if every individual that worked in the food system, whether you're on the farm side, agribusiness, you know, right through to grocery, helped promote good, credible, fun, informative resources like that, then that's the tribal approach, right? There's many spokespeople, many spokes. It's a movement, right? Like a grassroots movement, literally. Alfalfa roots, I guess, for our farm friends. A grassroots movement, right? That we can all help elevate the story. I would say that's been the effort that I've helped herald for many, many years, is that grassroots movement. We can all help tell the story. I think to really get to the next level, we need more corporate support in this field to say, you're spending millions of dollars on research, capital, innovation, et cetera. We need to be spending at least hundreds of thousands in advertising these types of messages, paid social media promotion, to really amplify it to the next level.
Social media is the best way to go about that. I know that, I believe it's Dairy Farmers of Canada, have a series of ads out now that promote modern Canadian dairy farms. But do you still think that it's the social media is the key to this?
Well, I mean, their ads, and Dairy Farmers of Ontario are really active on that front. That letter from a dairy farmer, really excellent work, putting a face to farming, transparent, authentic, we're real people, producing your food with heart, all the messages I love. And so that's an integrated campaign with significant dollars behind it. So it's got the advertising component plus the social media component. And I think the really important piece in it, which that one includes and all of our campaigns should, is public engagement. So it's not viewed as a lecture. It should be viewed as a conversation. We need to listen to our consumers. What are you concerned about? You have questions about your milk. You have questions about how we care for our animals or why. We want to listen as well as give them our information.
Now, throughout the pandemic, we've seen a fair number of different stories that have come out. And certainly initially that we were concerned that there was going to be a threat to us being able to keep some products on the shelves. And I've spoken about that on this podcast before, where I walked in on March the 14th and found empty shelves in the store for the first time that I've ever seen that. Has that all served to increase the trust in farmers and agriculture, or has that hurt the message?
Well, the data that I've seen in the last year has shown an increase in trust as well as an increase in appreciation for grown in Canada food and the food system in general. So that's positive news. And I would say, with the exception of an occasional empty egg counter or empty milk counter space, which was only sporadic or occasional, and we'd see those signs limit one per customer on some of those products. Other than that, our food system was incredibly resilient and continues to be. We're still not out of the woods yet. I saw many more empty spaces around toilet paper and cleaning products. I still don't get the toilet paper thing, really, to be honest, but whatever, to each their own. That seemed to be a priority for a lot of people. So when we think about our grocery stores, though, they were pretty full and they continue to be. My biggest concern was around food processing, and it continues to be. We don't have a lot of food processing capacity in our country. And so if a few major food processors have to shut down for any lengths of time, it's a lot of just-in-time delivery, and there's a lot of logistics. You think about chicken, for example, that could quickly back up. That piece, I still cross my fingers and hope it continues. But I felt the way the food system responded, we can all be incredibly proud. And consumer support for buying local. One retailer in Western Canada shared with me that their support for grown in Canada products was up 80%. Which is absolutely incredible. People are sourcing Canadian. They want to buy from their neighbors. And that particular retailer is making an effort to make sure they have even more Canadian product available.
I think that the empty shelves got people's attention. I think, as you said, the food system did a very, very good job of adapting and making sure that we always had enough there. But that seems to have opened that conversation, and people are much more aware of where their food comes from and why it's so important that we have a Canadian system that supplies that food to them.
100%. And if I could give a message, which I'm here to do, to every farmer listening or anybody who works in agribusiness, if you have the chance to talk to an MP or an MPP or a municipal leader, to just send them a note or give them a quick call to say, please continue to support Canadian agriculture, because if there's ever been a time that demonstrated the value of feeding our own country, if we look at the parallel between not having enough vaccines and the frustration of waiting or hoping other countries will share them with us, a first world country, it seems almost ridiculous. So if we sub in food, we import lots of food. We export much more food, but we definitely import things. You know, we can't grow coffee and bananas here. So I like those things. So I'll eat them from other countries. I love my coffee. So we do rely on other countries, but we absolutely can be self-sufficient on many, many, many foods. So that, I feel, agriculture has always been a bit of a Rodney Dangerfield, you know, no respect when it comes to the value we provide in feeding our country. So now, to turn up the volume on the value of food security, it's an opportune time.
Do you like what you're hearing from the Back 40? We'd like to hear from you. Send us an email with your comments and thoughts to theback40@trilliummutual.com or follow us on social media at Trillium Mutual. So you talk about food security. How does the public trust affect our food security?
The value of public trust and food security can be seen as interwoven. So I would put them together on the same plate, pun intended, to say we need public trust in our food system, and we need a healthy food system for the future. both of them are important. So if we start with the base of we want food on our plates grown here at home. So that's our fundamental principle. To continue to do that, we need to have good public trust in the food system and the people and farmers. So if we look at other jurisdictions where people have lost trust in the food system, if we look at Europe, for example, or certain countries where they banned practices that farmers basically aren't given the social license to farm or use certain management practices without extreme oversight, then that's where the permission to farm piece or what's has been referred to as social license comes into question.
And we have seen that in this country as well. Certainly the people will remember the argument that we had and continue to have over neonicotinoids in the industry. And we certainly have had our abilities to use those limited quite severely in Ontario. But that's a major issue when you consider it as a food exporting nation where we get a lot of our GDP comes from exporting food. If we can't use the same tools that everybody else is using to produce that food, we're going to be at quite a disadvantage economically when we go to sell that product on the world stage.
Absolutely. All of these issues are really complex, but unfortunately, when they play out in the media or a special interest group takes a hold of one, they only play up one side. So I think it's really important that we look at how we feed our country and how it impacts people, the planet, and animals would be the three pillars I use. And, you know, and the people includes community. So that would include jobs and, you know, economics as well as community and social. And then the planet, obviously, air, soil, plants, you know, all the environmental issues around that. And then animals themselves. My degree is animal science. Animal welfare and behavior is really important to me. So I always put them into the equation. Obviously, we value their use on many levels, whether it's grazing and giving us back carbon into our cycle with grasslands and or, you know, obviously as valuable food supply sources. So I think what happens with some of these issues and where we see in other countries, and, you know, you mentioned neonics here or perhaps banning pig barns in Manitoba was an example where you weren't allowed to build a pig barn. It's when an issue gets out on a limb and gets isolated and becomes rhetoric or a very inflamed out on a limb with only one point being the focus. So the value of having proactive conversations, going back to your early conversation, is in peacetime, building as much trust as possible, authentic, transparent conversations with policymakers and government leaders and farmers and grocery executives and restaurant owners to have keep those conversations regular and ongoing. So if and when issues come up, and they always will, you already have relationships and trust and rapport built.
You're always going to run into people that are going to decide for whatever reason that they have another agenda and that they're out to make sure that that particular practice stops. But if you go through farming and the different practices, there's always going to be somebody against just about every practice that we're doing. It's really important, as you said, to build those relationships. And I like the analogy there in peacetime, as opposed to when you're under attack. And that gets back to getting that story out ahead of the curve, as opposed to reacting to it.
Absolutely. You know, the other piece that's important with this is in Canada, you know, we talk about, you know, old McDonald's, kids came home and have taken over the farm with new technology. Some of them haven't. Some are old McDonald's, and that's awesome too. So the cool thing about how we grow our food in Canada is we have, you know, you can picture, you know, when people ask me, what is an average farm? You know, I laugh because there's no such thing. And isn't it awesome that we have so many choices and so many resources that individual farms can choose to grow GMO corn, regular corn, or organic sweet corn all on the same farm or next to each other. Like, that's so amazing. So we have so many food choices and choices on how we farm. So we do have small acreages, I guess I would say. And I always say, I don't care if you're growing a container pot with tomatoes on your patio or you have 10,000 acres of grain. That is awesome. You're feeding somebody. You're all on the team of feeding people. So if we take some of the verses to an and is one of my personal mottos is let's change some of these verses to and say, and you're feeding people. Isn't that awesome? And acknowledge, isn't it great that we have so much food that people can criticize us with their mouth full?
Yes, it's always a lot easier to change things when you're not scraping to find food where we're fortunate in this country. We don't have to do that. As an exporting nation, we certainly have lots of food here, maybe not as much variety as we've come to expect by trade. There's a lot of places in the world that don't have that luxury, and they spend a lot of their effort and a lot of their money that they earn just to have enough food to eat.
Absolutely. Well, and that's the other interesting thing on the data in the last year. If you're familiar with Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the social issues are up in the very top of the triangle, and the bottom is where we've been the last year around safety and health, right? And making sure that we have our bases covered. So we've seen a lot less interest in the more inflamed social topics, I would say, and a lot more meat and potatoes, literally meat and potatoes, and a lot more baking and just down in the base, a lot less discussion in those big social categories that perhaps we've seen in the past. We are human beings first. We think we're very civilized, but we are human beings first, and we want to make sure that our family is safe and healthy. That's really important. And we have enough food to eat, enough quality food that's safe, healthy, and affordable, then we can start talking about how the chicken lives or what impact we might have on greenhouse gases.
Now that we've brought that conversation back, though, to those basics, and after we have those basics looked after, then we can talk about how the chicken lives and how the cattle live and the other things that are above that in the hierarchy there. Is this the right time then to be having those conversations? You said to get out in front of the conversation. That would imply this is the time to have those conversations about the welfare of the animals and the environmental protections that we already have in place.
Absolutely. But we start with the base of, let's talk about the value of having healthy, affordable food here in Canada. That's our lead, right? You know, to say, isn't it amazing? We have healthy, affordable food grown right here at home by me and my family and your neighbors. And now let's talk about this week, Guardians of the Grassland is being publicly available. It's a documentary called Guardians of the Grassland. You'll be able to see it on YouTube. So that's a great example to say, you know what, isn't it great that we have healthy, affordable food grown close to home? My family has beef cattle. We have a couple hundred acres of grassland, supports a lot of endangered species and fixes a lot of carbon for us. So you can watch Guardians of the Grassland to learn more about how cattle are actually helping us guard the grasslands. But the conversation needs to start with them and the value of having healthy, affordable food grown close to home.
So how do we get that message out? It always seems like a very large task, and many of us don't feel we're maybe up to that. You've made a career out of getting that message out there. Not everybody obviously is going to be able to do that, but how do we all make a contribution to that?
Well, I think the easiest place to start is to think of yourself as a brand ambassador, to say you're representing the whole food system. You have the opportunity to make a difference in giving somebody perhaps a different perspective. They maybe have never met a farmer before, or they don't know anybody else that works in agriculture or related fields. So you have the opportunity to make a difference. And I always view everything as a barbecue. So picture you're going to a barbecue whenever we're allowed to do that kind of crazy thing. In this case, let's consider it a virtual barbecue. There's social media channels, etc. And you're the person that comes to the barbecue that actually, in my case, I know about the beef and I know about the wheat that went into the buns and the hamburgers. So I want to have a conversation with people about there at the barbecue, but I don't want to be the know-it-all that's giving somebody a lecture standing beside the barbecue. I want to actually have a conversation. So it includes like, tell me a little bit about you and what questions do you have? And it's got to be a two-way conversation. You want to position yourself as the helpful, friendly expert. And the easiest way to do that is to start practicing on your own social media channel. So if you have a Facebook account, there's many great resources. We've referred to them a few already. And to just say, hey, here's a new video that's coming out. Or did you know, refer to something from that virtual farm tour website or something out of the Real Dirt on Farming. That's a real gem of a piece on Real Dirt on Farming. Is full of little factoids that are easily shared. So those are some quick things anybody can do.
What's your latest project that you're working on then? Because obviously we all have things that we can do, but you've made a career out of this. What's next on your list, or what are you working on now?
Well, my passion is obviously connecting consumers, but also connecting our own food system partners. So in the last few years, I've been working in my own business saying, how can I take my skills and my passion and help other people do a better job, just like we're talking about today? So in the last 8 months or so, together with a dairy farmer named Andrew Campbell, former journalist and well-known to many, fresh air farmer himself, he and I have come together and we came to the same conclusion that we would like to help other people tell the farm story better. So we created a new website resource called Utensil. So it's a helpful tool like a utensil should be, from farms to kitchens. And we created that with the spirit of how can we package up our expertise to help other people do better. And so one example that would be relevant to our conversation today is called Grow Your Brand. It's an online training course and it's on demand. It takes about an hour from start to finish that you can do whenever you feel like it. And it's designed to for the individual to think a little bit about themselves and their personal brand and then how they represent their sector if they're a farmer or their organization if they work for a company, and then how they represent the whole food system in the bigger picture. So just really practical, a little bit on the fun side, authentic training that's available to anyone to help them do better.
Yes, we had Andrew on as one of our first guests on the broadcast, and we certainly can use more people like Andrew and yourself to tell our message out. You've both been great brand ambassadors, if you will, for agriculture in this country.
Well, thanks, Mike. And honestly, nothing makes me happier than help other people do better at telling the story. I feel that's the next place I need to package up my energy and my experience. So the Utensil training resource is a great place for people to go. We priced it inexpensively for a reason, because we want people to use it. And then after they take the online training or access some of the online resources, there's real people like Andrew and I available for coaching. So I had one farmer, for example, that was giving a talk to a group of fitness professionals. So she booked me to do some coaching with her on how to get the farm message across to this big conference of fitness professionals. How awesome is that? So helping other people take the farm story to the next level really brings me a lot of joy.
And you never know where you're going to run into that opportunity. That isn't necessarily the first place that you think of as an opportunity to educate people and have that conversation about where our food comes from.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we even think about how we introduce ourselves, I give your listeners a quick tip. It's like, how do you introduce yourself? You say, oh, I'm a cow-calf producer with, you know, 200 acres. Or do you say, you know what, I'm really proud to grow really healthy, high quality beef, you know? So maybe less about your number of acres or your commodity that you grow. My friend Sherilyn Nagel co-hosts one of our other courses called So Your Client's a Farmer, and she's a grain farmer in Saskatchewan. She's figured out how many bowls of pasta her wheat go into. So when she introduces herself, she's like, you know, I grow, I can't even tell you how many thousands of bowls of wheat of pasta for you. And it's so fun. And it's so much more relatable than sections, which even I know it's a lot, but I don't even know exactly what that means.
Yes, it's interesting that you talk about relatable and what people want to talk about and how it affects them. That introduction that you have, you know, I'm a cow-calf operator, then I run 500 acres. And that's information that as an agricultural professional, I'm fascinated by. And yes, that is the information, but I'm not the person that you're trying to talk to on this. And most people don't have any idea. Okay, so you ship to steer to market. I don't know how much meat that is. I don't know what that will feed. But if you can relate that back to something that they do understand, you're already halfway there to getting that conversation started.
Absolutely. And like, what's important to them to know? Like, I'm really happy I get to walk to work with my family every day. You know, like, put some values in there and less about the acres and production. One of my funny stories is a lady I was once talking to about cow-calf operations in Toronto thought I meant cesareans. Think about it. That is a cow-calf operation, just technically. So it's like some of our language is also a part of our problem, is we use jargon and industry terms, words like producers. When I used to work in the pork industry, we tested, what do you think a pork producer means? And people thought it meant the processor. Please call yourself farmers. Be proud of it. People understand what that is. And if you talk about what you grow for them and a little less about your operation, that's a positive thing.
We've been talking to Crystal Mackay, founder and CEO of Loft 32, and we've been talking about public trust in the agricultural system in Canada. Crystal, thanks very much for being part of the Back 40.
Thanks, Mike. Absolutely my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Back 40. Join us next time when our guests will be Dave and Doug Johnston from Mapleview Farms near Listowel, Ontario. Brought to you by Trillium Mutual Insurance. Be sure to subscribe to the Back 40 wherever you find your favorite podcasts so that you don't miss an episode. The Back 40, bringing the ag community together one podcast at a time. I'm Mike Brine. Until next time, take care and stay safe.